And on topic two, we have four panel members who've indicated that they wish to speak: John Whitfield, Jennifer Van Dolmen, Pat Risser, and Mark O'Brien. So we'll mix things up a little this time, again, starting with six-minute opening statements, and we'll start with Jennifer. I'm sorry.
Excuse myself?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Again, Jennifer Van Dolmen on behalf of the National Association of Pro Bono Professionals. We are in favor of expanding the regulations to allow for screening, advice, and referral. And I think the regulations, or at least this topic, could encompass a number of different things. I understand that specifically it's addressing the types of programs and the advisory opinions, as well as, I would presume, additional screening, advice, and referral types of programs. Given that it could be an expansive type of regulation change, I think, we, as NABPRO, have suggested that there be conditions, as we discussed before. We would ask that LSC consider conditions that would first look at the program to ensure that they are meeting the fundamental elements that we had outlined earlier, as well as consider a cap for these type of expenses, due to the fact that these types of activities are more likely to result in a brief service type of activity, and NABPRO strongly encourages not only brief service, but also recognizes the need for extended services representation. A third condition, if you would say it as that, that we would ask that LSC consider is that there is that LSC consider not allowing funds to be used as general screening. The concern that we have is if a program were to say, for example, say, oh, great, this is an expanded use of the funds, and now I can use this for my basic eligibility screening. We would hope that the PAI funds that are otherwise designated to encourage private attorney involvement wouldn't be diluted to the extent that it would go to sort of that general eligibility screening. Perhaps that's not at all considered by LSC. It's simply a matter of we want to ensure that that is a protected type of funding, that the funding goes to encourage private attorney involvement rather than to a standard type of eligibility screening. And again, we challenge LSC, given these constrictions we have proposed, to keep the regulations as flexible as possible. And we know that we're sort of giving you a message of we hope that you will keep these ideals in mind, which may restrict, as well as asking you to be flexible. So we understand we're proposing a difficult task, but we think that there would be a way to do both things, both keep the regulations flexible as well as protect money that would otherwise be able to go to these programs. The different measure, screening, advice, and referral programs, we think, could increase pro bono in a number of different ways. First of all, it increases creativity within programs, which we think is extremely important that pro bono and staff model programs have the flexibility to be creative. Nobody knows how to spend their funds better than the program themselves, and having that flexibility would allow them to do that. It would also allow for more greater variety of opportunities for pro bono attorneys who may be interested, or law students or others who may be engaged in this type of work. And it can result in a greater capacity for the programs. Some concerns, of course, as we mentioned, are the potential for abuse, which we would ask LSC to be concerned about that, as well as perhaps a shift in attitudes towards more towards brief services and less towards extended service type of litigation or an impact type of litigation. That was one of the things that our members had concerns about with regard to the potential of this program, is that their funds from their PAI allegation may be shifted from the current types of programs that are focused on extended service towards more towards a screening, advice, or referral programs, which may be more likely to result in a brief service type of program. That would be all that we have to say, but thank you for the opportunity again to comment.
Thank you. Mark O'Brien.
Thanks. I'd like to just comment briefly on this proposed change, which I would also recommend that that grantees be allowed to use their PI resources in this way. And again, go back to thinking about what is the most effective way to structure how legal services programs are and where legal services programs are providing their services. And so thinking about the flexibility to partner with other community access organizations and to embed legal services in other institutions that are serving, whether they could include social services agencies, they could include libraries, they could include the courts, the ability to be able to provide these kinds of brief advice and referrals as a component of embedding legal services where they need to be delivered, I think is an important principle. So, I think this is an area where I'd borrow from, now that he's departed, David Udell's advice that rather than thinking about, you know, overly regulating here, this is a place where the power to influence behavior through the development of best practices and the promotion of successful models will perhaps be more effective than thinking about overly regulatory enforcement.
Thank you. Patricia Risser.
Thank you. The pro bono task force report in its entirety talked more and more about collaborating and cooperating and being part of the total picture. For a long time, we were the picture. The picture has changed considerably over the last 30 years. There are more players. As I commented earlier, we still are the central providers of extended service. But I think it's important for us to be on the team, to participate, and for us to collaborate and cooperate. It is essential that we communicate and support, meaning encourage, help where we've got the unique resources to help or the expertise to help. But we should be involved in it. I encourage the LSC to adopt this expansion as well. Screening is essential to any legal services program, and it's certainly essential to the cooperative atmosphere that's discussed in the task force report. So we believe that it's valuable to support screening activities. We engage in screening in our firms. In our Milwaukee office, the services are diverse enough that we do screening in different subject areas. The Volunteer Lawyers Project has its own screening because we handle cases that aren't handled in-house by staff attorneys. But screening is really at the heart of the matter of getting people to the service that they need. And our ability to support them should be, not only our ability should be recognized, but we should be encouraged to participate in that. And to give you an example, I make a comment in my submission about how other programs feel about screening for our cases, for instance. And we don't ask other people to do that, but because of the unique role we play in the communities we serve, the others are always interested in being able to screen and refer to us. An example, in Milwaukee, for the Milwaukee area, we know that if we were involved in a deeper way than we currently are, we kind of are on the outside of the issue with the Milwaukee Justice Center. This is the Milwaukee Bar Association, the Clerk of Courts, and Marquette Law School banding together to provide service in the courthouse. They know, all of those organizations know our criteria in a general way. Our criteria for accepting cases and clients. Do they want to screen? Do they want to do the eligibility screening? No, they don't. They don't, largely because they're in the courthouse. They're viewed as a public service. While we're a public service also, our continued existence depends on screening and on doing eligibility screening. So there are going to be some natural, not barriers, but natural cautions about participating with others in terms of screening and that sort of thing. But we certainly ought to be not only sharing with other providers information about our program, how people can become eligible for our program, but also helping educate them about the issues that our clients are facing. We are looked to in Wisconsin as the primary source of information about most of the issues that we handle. We're the experts on defending tenants in landlord-tenant disputes. We're the experts on public benefits. It's where everybody wants to come to get the information that they need to help direct people to the correct services. So there's a caution with that. And we work with them because that's an important part of what we do. And yet at the same time, as the volunteer coordinator, I have to recognize that I've seen some of my best volunteers co-opted by these other programs. Co-opted. I'm a kid of the 60s, so co-opt is a big word. We've lost some volunteers, a measurable number of volunteers, to the organizations that are providing briefer service, because I recognize it. It's easier. And so we have this kind of push-pull. We want to collaborate. We want to be part of the solution. Another 60s statement. We want to be part of the solution, and yet we recognize that some of our volunteers who have taken advantage of the training we give and the support we give are not working for us anymore. They're working for them. But overall, cooperation wins the day in the program that I operate. Thank you.
Thank you. John Whitfield.
NLADA certainly supports the concept that grantees should be allowed to spend PAI resources to enhance their screening, advice, and referral programs. We believe that the test ought to be whether the engagement of the private attorney, or volunteer attorney, or outside attorney increases the resources available to the client community and or improves the quality of services to the client committee. The key is whether there are expanded resources to the community. We'd been given a specific question regarding Advisory Opinion 2009-1004, and we believe that a revised rule ought to overturn the result in that opinion. In that opinion, three LSC grantees had a contract with a non-LSC-funded nonprofit law firm to provide specialized hotline intake services in 10,000 cases a year. The opinion implicitly recognized that this contract would be permissible under the PI reg if the firm were a for-profit firm. But because it was nonprofit, LSC directed its grantees not to report 10,000 LSC eligible cases per year. We think that was unnecessarily restrictive, and we think that a revised reg ought to allow those cases to be included in that arrangement to be permissible under the PII reg. We think LSC should focus on the expansion of services to clients, not the legal structure of the volunteer or judicare attorneys. As we've talked about earlier, we think sort of the whole definition of private attorney needs to be revisited so that a volunteer or outside attorney could be someone who works for a government, someone who works in-house counsel for a corporation, attorneys employed by law schools or by bar associations, or even by other nonprofits or public interest law firms. For instance, you could have staff attorneys who work for an ACLU organization, and if we can collaborate with them and bring their resources to bear on our clients' issues when they weren't previously focusing on our clients' issues, then that ought to be included under the PAI rule, we believe. I guess going down that continuum, at the very far extreme would be if you have another legal aid society who's doing exactly what you're doing, but they're not getting LSC funds. If we collaborate with them, should that fall under the PAI reg? And under the test that we're proposing, whether it expands resources to the community, if that collaboration does not do so or result in additional clients being served, then no. But if it's a public interest firm that's not exclusively engaged in the same mission that we're about, and if we can collaborate with them and bring their resources to bear in helping low-income clients' civil needs, then I think that should be included.
Thank you. That concludes the panelist presentations. We'll now check to see whether anyone participating in the webinar has asked to be recognized. We do have a comment from Ken Pinocchi that he typed into the question box. His comment is, one issue that comes up in these times of shrinking budgets involves paid PAI attorneys. A worst-case scenario, which is a real possibility, is a closing of an office that covers several counties. An option to continue service to those counties is by hiring a paid PAI attorney. The most logical and trained attorney to contract with would be the attorney who was laid off due to an office closing. Currently, that attorney could not be hired because of the restrictions on hiring past employees. Perhaps this rule could be tweaked to allow the hiring of a laid-off staff attorney to cover territory from a closed office. Do any panel members have a comment on that?
John Whitfield, that makes perfect sense to me. I think that's a historical artifact in the old reg that we could in the definition of staff attorney and private attorney that we could do away with.
Virginia Martin has asked to be recognized. We'll unmute you, Virginia. Please go ahead and make your comment.
Thank you. My name is Jenny Martin, and I am director of the New Hampshire Bar's Legal Services Programs. I'm also past president of NAPRO. I served on the LSC Pro Bono Task Force as well. I appreciate this opportunity to make some comments. One of the things that was mentioned earlier by one of the presenters is the push-pull. And there is a push-pull between the advice brief services, which may be easier for volunteers to provide, and extended representation. I think we need to aim for the highest and best use of resources, which includes volunteers. Sometimes we find ourselves in a quandary. Our LLC, we're a sub-grantee of the, we received the PAI funds by the LLC grantee, which is a hotline. We find ourselves in a quandary because the hotline wants volunteer attorneys to handle family law calls, provide advice, yet those cases are going to make their way to us to place with family law pro bono volunteers. So it's a difficult and delicate balance to try to strike. If we need and anticipate volunteers, pro bono volunteers, to be the recipients of referrals, we have to be a little cautious. Not to say there's not a place for volunteers and providing advice or via hotlines, whatever other mechanism there might be. We just need to recognize, okay, when there's the need for extended services, and we do most of the extended family law, as well as private evictions and so on, who's going to do that work? Thank you.
Mary Ryan has asked to be recognized. Mary, we're unmuting you.
Wow, that's exciting. There's been a reference several times this afternoon with regard to the position of NABPRO. And one thing that on behalf of our ABA pro bono committee, we wanted to clarify that while we very much appreciate NABPRO's emphasis on the pro bono standards, and indeed Jeannie Martin and others played a significant role in developing the standards, and we do promote the use of those standards by programs to understand and implement best practices, we think it's very important that the programs be given flexibility in implementing them. We say in the introduction to the standards that the standards are intended to serve solely as guidelines and are not intended to create any mandatory requirements or minimum standards for performance. So again, while they may very well and hopefully will be a useful resource for any of the LSC programs, we would tend to discourage their use as some kind of requirement or threshold, either to qualify for PAI generally or to be allowed to use resources such as law students or pre-admission law grads. Thank you.
Do the board members participating have any questions?
Well, so I have a question about the whether, well, one of the concerns about using PAI funds for screening and referral services is, as I understand it, the our inability to track fully what happens post-referral so that we can understand the nature of, but I guess there's a sort of there's a compliance issue with regard to whether it, you know, it fits our definitions under 1614, but then there's this broader policy concern about whether what the impact is of the PAI funds for these services. Are there any thoughts on the panel about some ways that we talked about this at the last workshop a little bit about trying to track the results of referrals, and certainly open to any thoughts on that. But alternatively, or in addition, the idea of setting up some standards for the referral systems, such that a referral system that satisfies certain conditions or certain standards in terms of, I don't know, it's discussed about allocating clients to lawyers with the proper expertise and so forth, and having standards built into those services. So either tracking them on the back end or setting up standards on the front end in order to allay some of the concerns that have gone on prior. Are there any thoughts with regard to that?
This is John Whitfield. With regard to tracking, certainly for those referrals under the PII reg that are counted as cases, LSE grantees are tracking those cases and reporting how the case was closed and doing oversight on those cases. So the question is, for those non-case matters or other services that might be included under PAI activities, whether we would want to try to track them. And we may throw the baby out with the bathwater if we try to do that. From my own personal experience over years of working with PAI attorneys, they bridle at the reporting requirements we already asked them to cooperate with us on. So the more reporting we require of them, the less likely they will be to want to volunteer for us. And so once again, if we want to expand the capacity by imposing additional reporting requirements on them, we may be shooting ourselves in the foot.
I would agree with that. Jennifer Van Dahlman from NABPRO. I would agree with your analysis of that situation. It is very difficult to get volunteers to report. And I think actually the pro bono system has done remarkable growth in the last couple of years in regards to its ability to measure the outcomes. You asked at the very beginning of our conversation today if, let me get the exact question that you had asked, how we could show the market value of the contributions that whether they exceed our investment. And I think that many pro bono programs have grown leaps and bounds in our ability to do that already with our current mechanisms. As an example, I can measure that my pro bono program had approximately $2 million worth of donated services last year. I might not have been able to as easily measure that a few years ago, but more importantly, I'm able to better measure the outcome of the work that my volunteer attorneys have done. I know that that contribution of what they have been able to accomplish on my client's behalf exceeds the amount that they have donated. And I didn't know that a couple years ago. And that's because we have been encouraged to and been talking about and shown as best practices that evaluating those outcomes are important. And I think the current mechanisms that we have to do so are not only outlined in the pro bono standards that the ABA has published, but also have been incorporated in many programs' current ability to track those cases. And those mechanisms exist already. I don't know that we need additional requirements to do so.
Lori Mikva.
Thank you. This actually is probably a question for you, President Sandman, which is the National Public Interest Foundation grant. Is that the one looking at outcome
measures? The Public Welfare Foundation grant, yes.
And is it looking at measuring outcomes in the pro bono context?
That hasn't been carved out specifically as an area to be looked at, but I think it's within the scope of client service that we will be looking at. Yes. Yes, Melissa.
It's Melissa Skilleter, Ohio State Legal Services Association, and I had some follow-up on Mr. Keckler's question. I wanted to reiterate what Mr. Whitfield said about drawing a distinction perhaps between what's reported as an LSC case and what might be a different activity either under another service or another matter, where I agree with Ms. Van Dolman that the operation that we have in place for cases is already sufficient, but there are going to be situations, particularly with like these referral programs, where a referral program is an additional resource that we could operate if we didn't have the reporting requirements. And it's not a choice between a referral system with all of those follow-up mechanisms and all of that reporting. Sometimes that's just not feasible to do it and fulfill the LSC guidelines. The question is going to be whether you can operate the referral system in addition to your regular case or your case activities, and it's going to be an additional system that you might do as a matter or another service as opposed to operating on the same type of service level that you would do as a case under the LSC regs. Thanks.
Mark O'Brien.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the observation that to the extent that programs are able to invest in the infrastructure required to do effective screening and referral, as with all of their work, there may in fact be built into systems that would be developed new mechanisms for tracking the outcomes and make it easier for pro bono attorneys or people who took brief service referrals to report back in some qualitative ways. So again, you know, I don't think it's a question of setting up a new regulatory standard, but I think promoting best practices. And again, going back to my comment earlier about thinking about how would we engage other professionals beyond simply lawyers in thinking about the design of these systems and what the incentives are and ways to incentivize cooperation from folks who are taking our referrals. I think there's tremendous opportunities.
I have a question. Some of the comments have either implicitly or explicitly expressed a preference for extended service over brief service. They seem to assume that extended service is necessarily better in this context. My question is, why shouldn't LSE defer to the best judgment of local programs on that, to make the decision based on their local needs, the priorities they've established, and how they fit into the overall legal services environment in which they operate?
This is John Whitfield, and I think LSE certainly should defer to the local programs and whether they believe in a particular area or a particular kind of case, a particular client, whether a brief service is desirable versus extended representation. In an ideal situation with full resources, we would want to be able to provide every client with every need they had, whether it was brief service or simply advice. In many cases, advice or brief services are underserved clients. In other cases, that's exactly what they were seeking. But under the concept of providing the program and their potential volunteers and collaborators with the greatest flexibility to maximize the resources available to help our clients, allowing us to have that flexibility to choose in different situations whether a brief service program is a great thing if it brings in new resources. It should be left to the programs to do as they manage their resources.
I'd like to ask for some help in addressing one of the supplemental questions that we submitted to you. The question about alienage screening in particular. There are some compliance issues here that I think underlie the concerns that LSE has expressed in the past on the issue that we've been discussing. For those who don't have it handy, I will read the question. Alienage screening is a particular concern, it says, because the alienage restriction applies to all funding sources for LSE grantees. Can you suggest how to address alienage screening if LSE reconsiders the full screening requirement of OLA Legal Opinion EX 2008-1001 in clinics for which LSE grantees provide organizational and technical support?
John? John Whitfield. Jim, I think that really goes almost to the third topic to some extent. But I think the key is, in my view, and in LADA's view, is that LSC grantees provide a range of services to our clients, and they're all important. Some of them are cases, and then some of them LSC also promotes and encourages to do other services that aren't strictly reportable cases under the CSR handbook, and that both of those are valuable assistance to our clients, legal information versus representation or advice. The same thing ought to hold true in PAI activities. That same full range ought to be allowed. So we may involve some PAI activity that have reportable cases and comply with every aspect of the CSR handbook, and they are reported as cases to LSC. But there may be other services, other activities that should be allowed, we believe, under the PAI involvement rule, where you don't necessarily have all of that screening or that case oversight, yet the purpose, the intended target, are eligible clients. And if incidentally an ineligible client benefits from that, that should not mean that the program is not allowed.
Mark O'Brien?
Jim, I would just comment to agree with John on this. I think it's very important. I think we, you know, the regulations around alienage are valid and important ones to consider, but I think we also have to consider situations, and again, I think of disaster legal services provision, where an overemphasis on those types of strict regulations can actually impede the ability of LSC programs from putting themselves in a position where they can help eligible clients, because they're more worried about the possibility of a service of value being delivered to someone who is not eligible, that they would actually refuse to go into a situation that could actually keep 10 times as many eligible clients from receiving their services. And I think that, again, you know, the point about the ability to deliver services in integrated service models, which is what we're going to get into, I guess, in the last part more. I think there are, in most situations where LSC programs, at least in the jurisdictions that I've worked in, are very careful to try and bring in partners who would be able to better serve the needs of the of those clients for full range representation. And so I think they are careful to try and put themselves in a position where they're not taking on sort of sole responsibility for that, you know, ineligible client groups.
Thank you. We've been going for about 2 hours now. I'd like to give our court reporter, our panelists, and our board members a brief break. We'll take a 5-minute recess. For those of you who are on the phone, please stay on the line. For those of you who leave the room, please be back in 5 minutes. Thank you.